Bonsoir. How are you, dear friends? We are building the most inspiring and phenomenal communities of wine lovers. As we all know, wine is the catalyst of the greatest discussion. We'll be talking wine, but of course food, and everything that touches all our nation and senses. Bonjour, bonsoir, dear friends. Welcome to JCB Live. Happy hour with an amazing chef. Sean O'Neill, very famous name in the music industry as well, because for 20 years, he was an incredible DJ all around the world and in the best nightclubs, from West Coast to East Coast, all the way back to Vegas. Became an amazing chef over those two decades, cooked with some of the best, and became a master chef. Winner, Series 7. Unbelievable gentleman. I've had the opportunity to taste his incredible food. He's an inspiration. He's a drive. He has rhythm, energy, passion. He lives in Vegas, and he's joining us today to tell us a lot about the trends, the future of food, and his exciting new book. Sean, bonjour.
Woo! There it is. Hello, hello. How are you doing?
So good to see you.
Of course, mine overflows. I got the good one.
Hey, that's a good effect. Is it all over your legs, I hope?
Yeah, right? Right all over me.
It's going to bring a lot of excitement tonight to whatever you do. Champagne on your legs is the best. And Sean, I'm delighted to toast with you because I know you love French wines as well.
Absolutely.
The French champagne. Originally made by Buena Vista, first winery in California, first one to make a real French champagne in Champagne. So to your continued success.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers. So how has it been over the last 6 months in Vegas?
I mean, stressful, as I'm sure you know. I mean, I hear you were about to get on a flight to France when everything shut down. So, you know, Vegas is strong. Vegas is a tough city. I mean, we are a glistening diamond that was built in the desert, you know? So Vegas was never supposed to survive in the first place, you know? So Vegas will make it. It just may not look the same when we come back, you know? I think nightclubs may not have as much of an importance, which is heartbreaking. But I think, you know, I think we're going to get more into even more food venues and even more where you can share stories with each other, right? Not loud venues that kind of overpower everything. So I think we're going to be coming more of a small venue town. That's just kind of my personal opinion. I think lounges and you know, intimate venues are really going to be the way of the future, because you're not going to be losing that billions of dollars if you have to shut the venue down. So I think that's going to be a change, unfortunately.
And do you see that as a trend in general in America, even before the pandemic, that people like more lounges and, you know, obviously dishes to share and being together and sharing stories?
It was definitely heading that way. I think so. I mean, Vegas for the past, since I got here 14 years ago, that 14 years has been the span of let's build the biggest and the baddest, right? But yeah. I think we're losing some of that connection. And I do think that around the country, we are looking at more small tables, small settings, shared plates. Look at how shared plates have popped up all over the place. Tapas have literally dominated the scene for the past probably 4 or 5 years. So I think we're definitely going back to let's be more communal with each other, where we can talk and relate with each other. And, you know, the growth of the wine scene, the growth of artisanal foods in America, that's all helping.
Well, I'll raise my glass to whatever future that we belong to it, right?
Mm-hmm. Here's that, yeah.
Tell me a few words about this one that you're tasting, because you're the man of beautiful words and melody as well, and I'm gonna explain why to everyone in a moment.
I mean, it's, as all champagne, you get that effervescence, right? So I mean, that's the first thing that hits you. But what I do note about this is, it doesn't have as much florally as I would like. It's more of a straightforward, right?
Yeah.
It's more of a straightforward flavor. You get you get the soil, obviously, because terroir is so important in champagne and in wine and everything, but it's not as sweet as I was expecting. It's really kind of just touches the palate very gently.
That's right. Méthode Champenoise. All the vintage, and this is the oldest bottle, believe it or not, after the Dom Pérignon bottle of the 17th century. It's called the heritage bottle made in France. So with Buena Vista, when we decided to make a champagne, we said, let's pick the oldest bottle there is, and this is it. So this is a celebration of American history in France.
Yeah, history and delicious. Can't beat that.
So Sean, you have amazing rhythm. I've seen you in that environment. Tell us about the last two decades of your life in this amazing music scene as one of the most well-known DJ in the United States.
I would say that's a stretch.
Most I don't know.
I did pretty good. You know, I was always just really attracted and drawn to music. And that's one of the things that drew me to food too, is creation. Right, you're creating, you're blending, you know, you're taking something that exists but doesn't exist in the form that you want it to be in, right? So you're taking the raw natural ingredients and turning it into something beautiful. And it's the same way with music and food. You know, as a DJ, I take other people's ingredients and I turn it into something completely different that is mesmerizing. And with food, you can literally change a person's attitude. You can change happy, sad. You can give them that feeling of emotion just through a bite, right? And I've seen people having the crappiest day that there is and go to a good meal and have that good bite, and it just, the face just changes, right? It's just complete difference, night and day. So I think food and music both touch the soul. And you know, 20 years as a DJ in the DJ booth definitely prepared me for everything that was to come as a chef, and prepared me for, I think, a spotlight more so than anything else, because I had been there, I'd done that. And you know, now I love to teach. I love to feed people and educate people about food and share wine and food. And who doesn't love that, right?
That's right. So when we talk music and we talk your food, what do you play as music with your great food? Because I know you're a man of all senses, and that's what I love as far as your style. You don't forget one sense, including sound.
Absolutely. You know, it changes. It really changes depending on the setting and what I'm preparing. So, I mean, I've been working for a grill company recently, and I've been doing a lot of like more barbecue stuff. So that's definitely a little bit more of the classic rock edge. But when I get into my stuff and my fine dining, my more elevated, it really varies. Sometimes I'm feeling that kind of melodic electronic music. Sometimes I'm feeling smooth jazz, but it's definitely one thing. It's always sexy, right? When it's sexy food, you got to have sexy music, and you got to really create that whole environment, from the wine to the food, to the place settings, to flowers, you know, whether you want it that dark dramatic, like you're surrounded in right now, or that more white, clean, you know, French laundry type presentation, the music sets the tone, and you hear the music before you taste the food.
That's right. That's right. So how, because many friends listening with us tonight are looking for inspiration, looking for guidelines, looking for an evolution of life. You've had multiple lives in each segment, very successful. So how did you move from music to food?
Oh man. Frustration. It's a weird story. So in Vegas, when I first got here, it was all about being creative, right? As a DJ, it was all about being creative. What sets you apart? By the time I finished, when MasterChef came around for me, it was more about, let's play the most popular song and how many times can we play it throughout the night, because this table wants to hear it and that table wants to hear it and this table wants to hear it. So we lost creativity. So, and I understand that from a business standpoint. For a nightclub, you want to please the guys that are spending $20,000 in your club. You have to please them, right? From a DJ standpoint, we lost all creativity. So that's where my frustration started to build. You know, when I was getting asked to play Bollywood music because one table wanted to hear Bollywood music in a full nightclub that was jamming, that made me second guess what I was doing there. That was a big one for me. We really became jukeboxes rather than artists.
And yeah, that's, I think that's a very good point, because you know, the DJ world has to be very creative. You're creating music, you're creating environment, rhythm, electricity in the air.
Experience.
And it's a very good comparison, jukebox to a DJ.
Yeah. I mean, if you want a jukebox, if you want a pre-programmed, we all have pre-programmed music on our phones, right? You can find the downloads and you'd save a lot of money. But, you know, I, like I said, I understand the business side of it, but for me, it was frustrating. And MasterChef really came along at the perfect time for me. And it was, the transition was tough, because I went on this show, I disappeared for 6 months, you know, nobody knew where I was. People thought I had died or joined a cult and run off to the Amazon or something. but you know, it was tough getting away from something that I had known and loved forever. But when I realized that food was always there with me too, and food was that thing that I worked on at home, that I obsessed over, food was where I was supposed to be.
That's amazing. So from the DJ, you went to MasterChef directly? Is it how this happens? That's an amazing opportunity.
Yeah, so they came casting in Vegas, and I had always kind of had my dirty little secret was my food obsession. You know, if you're a badass DJ playing in front of thousands of people, you don't want to tell people that you're making cute little food, right? That kind of ruins the mystique a little bit, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s. Like, we were supposed to be kind of these rebels, you know? So, and now the chefs are the rebels, you see? I'm kind of following in that.
Setting the trend.
Yeah, I'm staying away from rejecting authority with every career move I make, I guess. Where was I? Now I lost my train of thought.
Yeah, so they came to recruit you in a way.
Yeah, they did open castings, and I went and I just blew it away. Like, I started plating my food, and immediately I'm in a room of 30 other people with 1,000 other people waiting outside, and immediately all the photographers just rush around my station and start taking pictures, ignoring everybody else in the room. It moved pretty fast from there on. So, yeah.
So how does that work then? You're going to explain us the competition, because that's a big deal. You won. I mean, you not just went to play, you became number one.
Yeah. So, my season had about 38,000 people around the country that auditioned for it. So, they do stops in different cities and do open castings, and then they do some recruiting. And, you know, really, they try to find people who can cook. And then, obviously, you know, it's TV. So, they want people who aren't going to freeze on TV as well, right? But they always, throughout those 38,000 people, it takes about a year to narrow it down, and you're sending in recipes and you're constantly corresponding. And then they finally get you out to LA, where they've narrowed it down to 80 people. And that's when it gets intense. That's when you start going head to head and you're battling to.
Are you fighting too?
Close. There's definitely, we're all mostly, for the most part, we're all adults, and they try to find people who have their head on their shoulders. But it's intense. I mean, I had a competitor, his name's David Williams, and he's one of the best poker players in the world. He would finish second place in the World Series of Poker, won $9 million, right?
Wow.
Yeah. So he was on the show too. He loved food, and he went on and they recruited him. He was one of their recruits, obviously, but because me and him are the same person, essentially, we are both highly competitive people, we were butting heads the whole time. I mean, it was constantly trying to slip the other person up, you know? So it gets...
You add some spice on his dishes, so...
Can't do that. There's too many cameras in there. They see everything. And actually, people have gotten eliminated in the past just for mistakes in touching other people's food. So... it's crazy, man. It's one of those just hardcore intense. They wake you up at 4 a.m., don't let you go to bed till 2 a.m. Like, you're filming, competing. It's intense.
And how is it to win? Tell us.
I mean, it's life-changing. I say it's life-changing, but it's life-changing depending on your mentality, right? A lot of people have won great cooking shows, MasterChef, Top Chef, any of these series-type shows. The one-offs, like Chopped, are a little tougher to really come out and do something with career-wise, because there's only one episode. MasterChef runs for a whole season. So it's all what you make of it afterwards. If you are willing to go out and bust your butt and earn it and earn respect from your peers, because now these chefs around the world are your peers, right?
Right.
If you're willing to go out and bust your butt and earn it, then it opens up the floodgates. But I can also tell you on the flip side of that, a lot of the winners in the past have waited for things to come to them, waited for the world to be like, oh my God, you're a superstar. You're so famous now. I want you to work with me. And now they're selling cars or they're doing something else, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's a passion.
What you do with it, for sure.
Yeah, it's 100% what you make of it. And if you don't have the passion for it, for food to start with, you're gonna tinker off and kind of fade away.
How did you get that competitive edge? Because, you know, when you came, we did this amazing competition.
Oh, yeah.
Fast. You know, you were competing in the DJ world. You're a great athlete as well. I mean, you have that in your mind. How did you get that approach?
It was really sports as a kid. I was just I always wanted to win. And I know nowadays that mentality is not always looked upon in the best sense. But you know what? Success in life means not necessarily being ruthless, but being relentless.
Right.
If you want something, you have to fight for it. There's nobody's going to give you anything. I'm not going to get political now, but so many people just want everything. Just here you go. You deserve this. Why? You know, I mean, work for it. I'm down to help everybody, but work for it. Show effort and you will be rewarded for that.
I love it. And I fully agree. And cooking really teaches that, the organization of the kitchen, the hard work from the farm to the table, to the presentation, to the taste. I mean, everything is at play.
And then only making a dollar off that plate.
Yeah. Well, that's another story. So we selected a white wine for you.
Okay.
That really speaks for your personality, Sean. And why Buena Vista? Because first California winery in the history of California, founded in 1857 by a man exactly like you, driven, competitive. He came from Hungary and started this winery that became number one and one of the most well-known winery in the world. And he had a drive like you. So we wanted to have a toast with you on this great wine that is dedicated, in fact, to his children. So cheers to you.
All right, and to you and to his children.
Oh, for sure. He had many.
Yeah.
So as we taste the wine, Sean, what is your key inspiration in life? Many people want to be like you. What inspired you to be who you are today?
Oh, man. Fear of regret, I think. You know, I don't want to. I mean, I find myself getting, especially through these past 6 months, 7 months, I find myself getting lazy on the couch a few days here and there. And it's just like, oh, what can I be doing with this time? What can I, how can I advance my career? How can I advance those around me? How can I advance, how can I help somebody? So I think fear of regret has been a big one. Not fear of failure, even though that's there too, because when it comes to failure, I indulge in failures because failures teach us lessons. And especially with food. I mean, everything's not going to be right the first time you try to do it. You know, I know Thomas Keller, and I know that you know how long it takes him to put a dish on a menu. You know, major chefs work through this for years before they put a little bite on a menu. So failure's not a big thing, but for me, I didn't want to regret any opportunities that I could have potentially had. And that's led us into some amazing, cool things that I've been able to do. I've been able to teach a week-long culinary class in Italy. I've thrown out first pitches for Major League Baseball teams, which led to me designing their menus in their VIP lounges. So even though something may not look like it fits your career, fits your path, there may be a little offshoot of that just blossoms, right? So fear of regret is a big one. And then just taking every single opportunity I could get.
That's great.
Whether the money was great or not, until you achieve a certain point, you know, you have to know that you're gonna have to spend money and build a reputation, build a following, things like that. So I think the biggest one was fear of regret, and then just taking every opportunity that was put in front of me. you know, and just loving the opportunity and soaking in the and learning from the opportunity.
That's very well said, very enlightening. Sean, what's your passion?
I mean, food for sure. Food is definitely number one right now. But you know, traveling and becoming more educated about the rest of the world, kind of learning the food cultures of the world. I can't talk about it too much, but I am working on a new cookbook that is more history based. So it's very focused on a certain food throughout the ages that has been with us since for almost 6,000 years. We have proof of this food going back that long. So
yeah,
I think for me, it's really more, I'm kind of taking that Anthony Bourdain mentality into it, where I really want to learn about people through their food and learn about food through the people, vice versa.
That's right. Yeah. Food is about culture and civilization.
Absolutely. Which blows my mind. You know, in America, we accept all this cultural food and we dive into it, but then we have a problem accepting the man that made the food sometimes, which is, it's just crazy, right? How does that make
food
sense?
For thoughts.
Yeah, food for thoughts.
No, but very well said. And I think, and we hope it's going to be changing. And the beauty of the American culture, it's in constant evolution and it's being challenged constantly, hence it's progressing faster than most because of that. So, but talking about the next cookbook, tell us about the first one, because you wrote an amazing one. And why don't you show us the cover and explain us the content? Because you kindly brought it to us at Raymond and we're very enlightened and we have it on our shelves.
Awesome. I hope people are picking it up.
Absolutely.
So the first book was part of the prize package for winning MasterChef. So I only had about 3.5 months to write it because they are on such a quick schedule. So I'll tell you this, when my season ended, when I was announced the winner, the next day I had to fly back and film my appearance on the next season, right? On the following season. So
very tight.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was out till 6 a.m. and then on a flight at 6:30 in the morning after celebrating with all my friends all night. So that was a lot of makeup needed on that day of filming.
No, you don't need that. You can do it. You're the athlete.
So the first book was, I'm not going to say rushed because I already kind of had it planned out. The reason I did MasterChef is because one of the prizes was a cookbook. The money obviously is great, but I wanted the cookbook because I knew it led into other things. It led into appearances, right? Because if you have that product, events want you to come. They want you to come in and because it brings excitement to their event if they have a cookbook author or somebody.
For sure.
So I knew that having that product would advance the later on parts of MasterChef. So the writing of it was 15 hours a day, nonstop. I poured almost every penny I had at the time because I hadn't gotten the MasterChef winnings into it. It was over and over testing the same little things nonstop. The risotto had to go through 15 different variations before I figured out. And I've been making this damn risotto that's in the book for 20 years. But when it comes time to put pencil to paper and you know people are going to be making it, you want it to be extra special. So
very true. And you have a great sense of discipline and perfectionism. So you have to make it fabulous.
Yeah, it's a good thing and a bad thing. Like it drives some people crazy, like my wife.
Well, she's still around. I saw your ring. So
she is for now. She's still dealing with me. She's still putting up with the perfection. You know, she posts every once in a while. She'll take a picture when I'm getting into one of my fancier recipes and I know that I have to take pictures for it because it's going out to this company or that company. And, you know, it'll take me 45 minutes just to position the plate the way I want it before she gets to eat. So she'll take a picture of me doing all my ridiculousness and this is how long I have to wait before I get to eat.
Well, but I think, you know, not to interrupt you, but I think it's so important. The visual aspect of it, the presentation. And, you know, let's never forget that the foundation of a traditional kitchen is the same as an army. It's very disciplined, it's very organized, it's very structured. See, and I think it needs to follow rules.
Yeah, people forget about that a lot, and people wonder why kitchens are so strict, but they were developed on the hierarchy of the military. That's why you hear yes chef so loudly. I mean, it's a respect thing. But it's also so everybody else knows that that's the man in charge. That's the man creating the food. That's the reason that you've come here.
That's right. So what's in your book? Because we're going to have to invite you another time.
Yeah, we got to do a dinner. Kitchen.
In your kitchen, you're going to have to demonstrate something. But yeah. What are your two favorite recipe of all time?
Oh, man.
If you had to demonstrate something, this is it.
You know you're asking me my two favorite children right now, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I'll say, let me see if I can.
If it was your last supper and you were asked to prepare two things, and it doesn't have to be an appetizer, main course.
Am I eating or am I serving?
You're doing both. you're preparing and you're sitting down at the table as the 13 member or the.
All right, so I'm gonna do a three courser for you. Yeah. I'm gonna do a three courser. So my first, and I don't have pictures of all of them in here, but my first would probably be my scallops with a little bit of a caviar lemon beurre blanc. I serve that over a pea puree and then a little bit of a fennel cream. I see your lips smacking.
I'm salivating, and it would be going very well with the chardonnay.
And that would go beautifully with that. First and second would go beautifully with this white. Actually, I even like this with the. I even like the champagne with the scallops. I mean,
I'm with you.
Caviar and champagne. Well, you're a French man.
Sure. You know,
caviar and champagne. Second one would be my lobster ravioli, which I don't have a picture in that. It's a squid ink pasta dough served with a beautiful lobster mascarpone filling. But then we use some Pernod to make a nice sauce. And then we do a little bit of a lemon air, like foam over top of it.
Cool.
And I say we because I usually have some people helping me when I cook. I created the recipes, but in my mind, I'm not anything without a team behind me. So I like to explain that because people get confused when I say we all the time, but.
No. Well, you can speak like the king, you know, we is me, I'm the population. Another way to look at it.
I mean, you just gave my secrets away, John Chow.
Hey, are you, on that dish, because of the foam, are you into molecular cooking as well?
I was big time for a while, I'm not anymore. No. I use it when it makes sense. It's become too much of a crutch for a lot of people. And I see it around the country that people are using it in place of technique, in place of actually having a good dish. It's more of a, hey, look at me, instead of let this speak for itself, you know?
I see. Okay.
But I do, I dabble, and I used to dabble a lot more. But now I mean, especially after everything that's going on in the world, like, I think everybody is going back to more of a family style, a more rustic style. I mean, even I've been keeping an eye on California Michelin restaurants because I'm dying to get to a Michelin restaurant. I really just want to go to a really nice dinner. And all of them, except for two, have switched to a more of a family meal type dining. One of them's French Laundry, and obviously French Laundry is supposed to be the guiding light that leads fine dining out of this. That's what French mm-hmm. Laundry is. French Laundry is that temple, you know? So I don't expect French Laundry to change that. The other one is the place down in San Diego called the Addison, which there's only two places right now that are really putting on their menu. And I definitely commend them for that. But I also understand the other side of coming back to the roots and just wanting to nourish people. Granted, nourishment from Manresa is going to be quite the nourishment, you know.
For sure. So well said. Talk about your third dish, because okay, I interrupted you. There was a third one.
The third one, I'm just going to keep it simple. It's just going to be a big fat ribeye with a huge slab of foie gras on top of it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You're getting me excited, so now I'm going to go to the red wine.
I know what speaks to a Frenchman.
Oh, you know.
And that's where the red wine comes in.
So that's where the Pinot could come into play. How would that do with your ribeye, do you think?
I haven't gotten into it. Let's try. Oh, I mean, smell. Yeah, this would be great.
So open top fermenter, long fermentation, roughly 18 days. In that beautiful open top fermenter, physical pigeage, and then aging for 10 months in the barrel. So yeah. This is Burgundian techniques.
I mean, the barrel is the first thing that hits me, like that, the woody, oaky. I mean, I hate to reference this, but I bet it kind of gets that California wildfire. Like, you get that smoky barrel, right? Yep. So it definitely, and that could be from the land too. I mean, you guys have experienced so much fires recently. Let me ask you a question. Does that play into, even if your land has not been burned, but just ash falling,
sure,
hitting it, like, how does that affect?
That could affect your vineyards for sure. Yeah. I mean, hopefully those fires have been very mild lately. So hopefully it's not affecting it, but what we call smoke taint could be really getting into the wine. In this case, this is really the aging on new French
oak. Oh, yeah. No, it works with the wine, like, yeah, for sure.
And here we want to get between your foie gras and your ribeye. So we want to be leaking that foie gras and biting to that ribeye and chewing to the wine.
Well, it's nice because the acidity of the wine would be perfect to cut through that foie gras of this. And it's that just perfectly sweet acidic tones in here. So that matches great with the beefy grass. I usually use a grass fed or a better quality beef. So that would pair beautifully with the beef. You know, the foie gras and steak is a perfect combination, but when you throw in a well-done red wine, I mean, it doesn't get any better. That's a death meal.
This would that work to be forgiven by your wife for your sense of discipline and length into taking a picture of the picture of the meal?
Yeah.
Would she forgive you for that?
That would definitely be a good earned good forgiveness. The scallops are actually what I made her on our first date, and I think the lobster ravioli was shortly thereafter. So,
oof.
Yeah,
those lobster are ravioli, amazing.
Right, so, and with Pernod.
Yeah, with Pernod, why not?
Yeah.
So, Sean, share with us. You know, you've done so much in your life, so much success, so many exciting things. What is your next dream?
I mean, well, we really want to get a restaurant going. Still haven't had my first restaurant, and we were close, and I'm thankful that it didn't happen because we would have been opening right around February.
Yeah.
And as a new restaurant, I don't think I would have literally put every penny I have into it just to see it close in a month. So in a way, as heartbreaking as it was when my investor backed out at the last minute, I mean, we were literally looking at venues, looking at locations, and we won't get into that, but investor backed out. But we would have been open probably around February, middle of February, around before Valentine's Day.
That's probably obviously a blessing not to do
so. A blessing in disguise, 100%. I mean, if I would have opened that, I would have lost my house. I would have pretty much lost everything because I would have poured everything into it. So I definitely want to get a restaurant going, and that's kind of the focus right now. Besides the new book that I'm working on, that's a big one. But I want to get a restaurant going because that gives me a home base. It gives me a place where all these events that I've done. You know, Vegas is a hub for international travel, and one of the reasons that I did get on the road for 250 days a year is because I knew I needed to build an international base. Because Vegas is an international city. And I want to be able to provide to those people. You know, I want to be able to give back to my community. I want a place for my community to come. I don't want to be in a Las Vegas casino. That's Gordon can keep that. Gordon can have the casinos. I do not want that pressure, that stress. And on top of that, if a casino decides they want to end your lease, you're gone like that. So I want a neighborhood place that is, you know, warm and people come there for the food, but also hopefully the John Charles Boisette wines. we can talk about that later.
On us for sure. When you open, we'll be there.
Yeah. So I want a community place, you know, and I would just want that to be the start. You know, I have about 6 concepts in my mind right now that we've pretty much got planned out. We've got drawings on them. We've got everything that we need. Now we just need to start implementing and putting into places.
Congratulations. Very exciting. We cannot wait.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, this is the pandemic is unfortunately for a lot of people, but for somebody who's trying to open restaurants, there's kind of a shining light in the darkness because, and I hate that I'm saying this even, but because of the misfortune of a lot of people, there's a lot of locations and we can't let these communities die, right? So somebody's got to step in and put a new restaurant or a new this or a new that in these locations that unfortunately didn't make it through this. So as I'm trying to be a wise entrepreneur, I'm going to take advantage of that, but it's not just for my benefit. I really want to help build these communities back up, bring some jobs back in, and really give people something to be happy about on the corner of their street, or, you know, I don't know. It's just,
well, that's what it's all about.
Exactly. Yeah, we're all trying to figure out this new world that we live in, and, you know, how we can benefit, but also not be selfish pricks at the same time.
But I know you will. So, final words, Sean. Yeah. You've given so much enlightenment, inspiration, some great ideas. You've given an amazing path of your own guiding career that has been incredible, winning MasterChef, doing your own cookbook, soon your own restaurant. What message, as a conclusion, do you have for all of us?
Oh, man.
I know, it's a big one. But
put that one on me, huh?
It could be music. You could say it in music too, you know?
You know, so this, I posted publicly about this, but my grandfather just passed away from COVID-19.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. He was old. And I think, obviously, the COVID is what pushed him over the edge. Yeah. I think we need to, my message would be, I guess, is we need to stop seeing people on the surface. You know, stop looking. We don't know that person's mother just died, and we don't know that person just got diagnosed with a deadly disease. I think,
yeah,
we have become such a self-absorbed society because of social media, and if something's different, it scares us. And to me personally, I find differences thrilling, right? Because it helps me learn something. So I think my message would be, learn something from somebody different than you. Don't abandon them and cast them away, because I sure as hell don't know everything. I would assume that everybody that's there in the room with you would probably agree that they don't know everything. So let's take the time and let's learn. Let's be accepting and open our minds up a little bit more.
So well said. Sorry about your grandfather, but thanks. As you said, I think allowing us to discover the other person and to be having compassion and getting to know people and wanting to know people. And you said that on the culture of food, which is discovering those civilizations. I think it's so well said. Well, Sean, thank you immensely for being with us tonight. This was so much fun.
Thank you for having me. It was great to see you again. We can't wait 2 years between these.
I know. And let's make sure next time we have those beautiful scallops, we have that risotto.
Absolutely.
We have the foie gras rubai.
Yeah.
And maybe your next book. So
yeah, we'll see.
Very quickly.
I'm hoping late 2021, early 2022. And announcements may be made sooner. So we'll see.
Well, congratulations, Sean. And we love your competitive edge, your lifestyle, your personality. You're a great example. Thank you for being with us.
Same to you, sir. Cheers. Thank you for having
me. Cheers. And to Vegas.
Yeah. And to Yountville, Napa.
Thank you.